I'm Dave Drexler with Inside Art. In this segment, we feature a critically acclaimed historical novel that unearths a little-known secret Nazi breeding program to create a master race leading up to and during World War II. Cradle of the Reich by San Diego author Jennifer Coburn follows three women, all strangers and very different from each other, who find themselves at a Nazi Lebensborn Society maternity home at the start of World War II and who change the course of each other's lives. Cradles of the Reich has received widespread critical acclaim from the Washington Post to the Associated Press, whose reviewer Donna Edwards notes, every historical novel should strive to be this compelling, well-researched, and just flat-out good. Jennifer Coburn has also published six other contemporary women's novels and is the author of the mother-daughter travel memoir We'll Always Have Paris. Jennifer, it's great to have you on Inside Art.
It's great to be here, Dave. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, this is quite a story just to get to the point of writing about a story. Well, tell me how it all started.
So I had always been intrigued by World War II and the Holocaust and how a country like Germany, which was a leader in technology and arts, how they degenerated into a cult of hatred in essentially a 20-year period. So that has been a lifelong interest of mine. And then I saw a television show called The Man in the High Castle, which was based on the Philip K. Dick novel of the same name. And it imagined a dystopian 1962 America in which the United States was part of the Reich because Germany had won the war. And there were a lot of disturbing elements of the show, but the one that really piqued my curiosity was when a woman, this beautiful blonde German woman, said that she had been bred through the Nazi Lebensborn home. And it was a breeding program which aimed to create 2 million racially pure babies. Now, I thought, this has got to be a fictional element of the show, but curiosity got the better of me, and I Googled Lebensborn, and the first image that I saw was this row of nurses holding little bundles of babies, and it was a black and white photo. They were almost in the military formation, and it was that moment when I realized that the Lebensborn breeding program was real. And it operated in secrecy for 10 years, from 1935 until the final days of the war.
And we didn't really know about this to a great extent.
I hadn't heard of it. And really, all I wanted to do was read a historical novel about the Lebensborn. I had a lot of questions about how this program worked, how the women were selected, and why. Why would women volunteer to have sex with strangers just to have a child for the Reich? And that is what they called it. They called it having a baby for Hitler. So I set out to find this historical novel that answered all of my questions about the Lebensborn Society and also told me the stories of the women who were involved with the program, the volunteers and the nurses. And I couldn't find one. I found a lot of nonfiction books, but no novels. So I decided to write the novel that I wanted to read with a book club.
So are these characters that you've created for this book based on actual people, or are they an amalgamation of things that you came to know about these events?
No, the three characters are fictional. I will say they are representations of the three choices that Gentile German women had in 1939 Germany. One is the resistor, and that is Gundi, who was a member of the resistance and secretly pregnant with a Jewish boyfriend's baby. There is Nurse Irma, who represents the bystander. And she's just kind of, like a lot of Germans, just kind of keeping her head down and trying to stay out of trouble. And then there is Hilda, who is the Nazi true believer, who is excited to be part of the Lebensborn Society and is honored to be pregnant with a high-ranking Nazi official's baby. So these are the three different faces of German women at the time, non-Jewish German women, and that's who I set in a real Lebensborn home. And there are some cameos by real Nazis, like Heinrich Himmler, like Goebbels, the Minister of Propaganda, and the Reichsfrauenführerin, Gertrude Schultz-Klink, who was the head of the Women's League in Nazi Germany.
Well, Jennifer, I think that's a tremendous challenge to begin with, just to assemble all this information and then to inhabit these characters that you've created, who have a rather despicable belief system.
Yes, it was hard to do, especially as a Jewish woman, to write from the perspective of a character who really feels like the world would be a better place if you and your family weren't in it. But it was important for me to include that perspective because I wanted to show what ordinary Germans were exposed to at this point in history. What was the propaganda they were hearing? How did they come to hold such staunch anti-Semitic beliefs? And much of it was hard to absorb and hard to regurgitate through dialogue, but also it would have been, I would have been remiss in my duties as an author if I did not include that perspective.
Were you also driven in some small measure by contemporary events and circumstances with the rise of white supremacy in the United States and Europe today?
You know, I don't think that that drove me to write the book. It was a pure curiosity about the Lebensborn Society. But as I did my research, I could not help seeing parallels between the rise of Hitler and some of the anti-Semitic and really fascist beliefs that are happening here in the United States and the racist beliefs. For example, there's the obvious, there's the otherization, there's the dehumanization of minority groups. There is also the demonization of the free press. I mean, Hitler called the free press the Lügenpresse, which meant the lying news.
Sounds very familiar.
It does, doesn't it? Hitler also told Germany that they really won World War I. I mean, despite what everybody else, what the history books are telling them, they won if they hadn't been stabbed in the back by the Jewish people, which, Dave, I cannot figure out for the life of me how we are responsible for the loss of World War I because if you take a look at the Treaty of Versailles, we weren't even there. And we were also the most overrepresented minority who fought for the Central Powers and Germany in World War I. So I don't know how the heck we got stuck with the blame for World War I. But it's an amazing thing, propaganda. It is the telling and retelling and repetition of a lie so often that the masses believe it.
So you have these three characters, the dynamic between them. How does that develop and where do you take them? Not to give too much away, though.
Yeah, no. They each want and need something completely different. And that is how you create conflict in the story. I mean, you have one character who wants to save her life and the life of her unborn child. And you put her in a home where another woman is wanting to rise in the ranks of the Reich and is completely devoted to the cause and wants nothing more than to be important and valued in the Reich. And then you have another woman who is trying to create a sense of family and escape from her past and create a new future where she is a mother figure or an auntie to these women in the program. And how does she continue to live in peace with her own conscience once she learns what the Lebensborn is really about? And the answer is she can't. She has to choose what side. Now that she knows better, she has to choose what side she is on.
You know, the circumstances surrounding those maternity programs They were not necessarily expected to keep those children, right? They were going to give them to others?
Oh, they were not only not expected to keep those children, what they were expected to do was to forfeit them for adoption to what the Nazis considered suitable German homes. It was never the intention of the Reich to have these women leave and raise their children as single mothers in Munich. They were always supposed to give their babies to the Reich. That said, if a woman was there to become pregnant and she fell in love with an officer who she had a relationship with, she could get married and keep the child. But what was much, much more common was a man would come to the home, impregnate a young woman, and then he and his wife would adopt the child.
And in your research for this book, what did you find that the reactions of women who were part of the program were to having to give up the child that they just carried?
Well, the wives didn't love it, but you couldn't really argue with anything that was in service of the Reich. And Heinrich Himmler, who was the Reichsfuhrer, the second in command, in Nazi Germany, second only to Hitler, he wanted to create 2 million new babies for the Reich by any means necessary. So he created maternity homes for women who were already pregnant. He set up a breeding program where SS officers were encouraged to impregnate as many young women as they possibly could. And then when the war started in 1939, Nazi soldiers on the ground would identify blonde hair and blue-eyed children in countries that they had invaded, and they would steal them. They would kidnap them, bring them back to Germany for what they called Germanization, and then adoption. And in the end, 20,000 babies were bred through this program, and 200,000 were stolen.
And then they went on to live lives and deal with those repercussions themselves, didn't they?
Yeah. The most famous one, the most famous Lebensborn, is Anni Friedlingstadt, who was one of the singers in ABBA. She's the brunette woman, and her father was a Nazi officer. And actually, here in San Diego, we have one of the last living Lebensborn. His name is John Gunderson. He's 77 years old, and he was conceived during the war and born right after the war. And he is in Oceanside running a surf shop right now. And he called me after he saw an article in the Union Tribune and explained that his birth mother had signed up and lined up to have sex with Nazi officers, and that his father was a pilot for the Nazis.
Jennifer, where can people go to get more information and purchase a copy of this highly acclaimed historical novel, Cradles of the Reich?
They can get the book anywhere books are sold, Barnes & Noble, independent bookstores. They can order it online if they want, but it is out in hardcover now, makes a great holiday gift. And if people email me their address, I can send them a signed book plate so that they can give their friends and loved ones a signed edition.
And that would be at jennifercoburn.com.
Yeah, and I should also say that I'm going to be at the Encinitas Barnes & Noble on December 9th. If people want to swing by from 2 to 3 o'clock and get their book signed, I'm happy to take care of that for them.
Thanks for mentioning that, Jennifer Coburn, and thanks again for being on Inside Art.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Cradles of the Reich, an historical novel by Jennifer Coburn, is published by Source Books and available through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksellers nationwide. Friday, December 9th at 2 p.m., Jennifer will be holding a book signing at the Encinitas Barnes & Noble location at 1040 North El Camino Real in Encinitas. You can learn more at jennifercoburn.com. Inside Art is made possible with support from the members of Jazz 88.3. Replays and extended versions of every Inside Art broadcast are available online at jazz88.org/Inside Art. Again, my thanks to Jennifer Coburn and Jonathan Courant. For Jazz 88.3, I'm Dave Drexler. Join me again on air and online for another edition of Inside Art.